Blog Talk Radio.
Always supporting local MMA, you're listening to Full Guard Fight Radio.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
Saturday night, and my buddy, where the hell is he? He's here somewhere, Mr. Iceman London. How are you doing, buddy?
Carl Mortensen, how are you, my friend? It's Saturday night, 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, Full Guard Fight Radio. I couldn't be happier, more excited. How are you? I'm a little disappointed right now because, Carl, I don't even get an intro anymore. I don't even get my walkout music anymore. I'm a little sad. I'll deal with it, but... how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I was actually planning on playing it, and then I lost it in the switchboard here somewhere. So, my fault.
See, you lost it in the sea of awesomeness, is what you're telling me.
I lost it in this mess of what we call a switchboard here on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, fair enough. Sea of awesomeness, switchboard on Blog Talk Radio. Equals the same thing. That's all I got to say. Carl, listen, I'm a little pissed off tonight, my man. I stopped out and had dinner with my father and my son tonight, and I met up with a. I know you're Canadian. This is not a dig, and I'm not trying to be funny when I say that. But I know you're Canadian, and I know you know your military is different than my military. But I just got to say one thing. I met a veteran of the Iraqi war tonight. Served three terms in Iraq. Okay, three terms. He missed his daughter's birth. He missed his second daughter's first and second birthdays. This man has protected our country. This man has, given everything he has. He wears a bracelet on his hand for four of his comrades in his team that died in an IED explosion. You know, he was one of the ones that made it out of it. This man just found out, today's Saturday, just found out yesterday that he is losing his benefits, all of his benefits. Just came out of active duty. What did he tell me? I'm sorry, a month ago maybe. Just found out yesterday he's losing all of his benefits because the government is cutting back on all kinds of military benefits. He's been in the service for 12 years. He's got two children. He's married. The only benefits he has are for the rest of his life he's going to be able to go to the VA to get medical for himself. I'm just really pissed off that our government, this man has protected us, has fought for us, has been shot at, has seen combat, has had friends die, has missed lots and lots and lots of family things to serve his country, and we are just yanking things out from underneath him. I really feel, I understand, he and I talked a little bit about the cuts that are going on in the government right now, as far as this whole rollback of military benefits and things, and he's on board with it. He's actually okay with it. I wasn't. He's okay with it in the fact that, you know, some of the kids that are enrolling now are just doing it to get their GI bills and things. But this man's been in for 12 years. I got to think there's some way, there's just got to be some way that this man and his family can have their medical paid for. I mean, you know, he's suffering for some postpartum, you know, he didn't have the baby. He missed the baby's life. He's suffering from, what's that word I'm looking for? I can't remember.
Hoser.
Hoser?
Hoser?
No, he's not suffering from being a hoser. I'm just ranting and raving. I'm just really pissed off about it that our government is giving this guy some shit. And, you know, I thanked him 100 times. I bought him like 27 beers. I think he's hammered and passed out on the bar stool. But anyway, so that's just where I'm at tonight, going into this interview. And I know we have a young lady coming up first, Cheyenne. And I'm not even going to attempt to say her last name. I'm going to make her say it for me because I don't want to butcher it. I don't want to be disrespectful to her. This young lady just turned 18 recently. She fought in her first professional MMA fight like a day or two, maybe a week, after her 18th birthday. But without further ado, Cheyenne, I'm not even going to attempt it. Cheyenne, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Cheyenne, please say your last name for everybody.
It's Valismith.
Valismith. Okay.
Yes.
So, Cheyenne, I mean, you've had kind of an interesting month, right? You turn 18,
yes.
You become legal. You're allowed to buy cigarettes and chewing tobacco. You have your first professional MMA fight. Tell me a little bit about this last month. Tell me, you know, walk me through this last month in your world.
This month of June was pretty crazy. I didn't care so much about my birthday. I just cared more about the fight. I was training hard every day. You know, I had a lot of attention for the fight, and it was just really built up, and then my birthday came around, and the fight was, like, 4 or 5 days later. But,
yeah.
I did accept the loss, and I'm fighting again August 24th, and, yeah, I'm training harder now than I was before because I don't want to ever accept failure again.
Well, I got to say, I follow you on Twitter. I follow you and I are finger quotes friends on Facebook. I see every picture you put. Now you're 18 years old. You're still in high school. Is that correct?
No, I'm not.
You're not. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Even so, you're still 18 years old. I know a lot of 18-year-olds. I know a lot of 21-year-olds that are out partying and living the life. And I promise everybody that's listening that every single time I see a post, a quote, a picture, anything. It has you in the gym, has you. I've never seen you partying. I've never seen you out living the life. I've never seen any of that. Do you feel like MMA has taken away a little bit from your, I don't want to say childhood, because you're a grown woman now. Do you feel like it's, you know, you've missed out on some stuff, or do you feel that this is where you want to be and you want to, and this is what you want to do?
I get asked that a lot. My lifestyle doesn't involve partying. I've never been the type to go out, you know, because I've been a martial artist my whole life. So being raised as a martial artist, training has always come first over anything. And, you know, yeah, I'm 18 now, and it's like, oh, I can get into a club now, but my clubs are, you know, in the gym. So,
I'm not going to lie to you. Every single time I see a picture of you, it doesn't matter if you're doing squats, doesn't matter if you're clung to a heavy bag in the gym, you got a smile on your face, and you love what you're doing.
Yeah, every single morning from like 12 to 3 doing weights, you know, to get stronger, and I just love it. I mean, I don't go with a group of friends. I don't really have friends to go to the gym with, but... You know, I just love it. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't be doing it. And,
yeah.
You know, if you don't love something, you shouldn't do it. And I love going to the gym every morning, and I love training.
What time do you get up in the morning to go to the gym, Faye?
It depends. Sometimes I'll wake up around like 7:30 to go to the soccer field with my coach, and we do mitts and running, like sprinting down the soccer field, and then we do like 5-minute pad drills, sprint down to get used to the hot heat, fighting in the heat because of lights in the cage. So we go to a soccer field. I'll do that about 3 times a week. When I'm not doing that, around like 10 o'clock, get to the gym at 11:30, take my pre-workout, do some weights. I'm doing powerlifting right now because I am the smallest out of all my opponents, so I really had to bust my ass every day in the gym, and it sucks, but...
Woman, stop smiling. If it sucks, stop smiling, Shay. Every time I see you, you're smiling. I love it. It actually kind of makes me giggle a little bit. It makes me feel like comfortable that you're in the gym working your ass off. And you got a smile on your face. I appreciate it, and I know a lot of other people do. Shay, take me through how you started as a mixed martial artist or a boxer. You know, how does I mean, and I'm not trying to be offensive. I mean, you're a pretty girl. How does a pretty girl like yourself become a mixed martial artist?
Well, I started training at 3 years old for karate, and I kept that up till 7. And then when I was 8, I started up taekwondo, and I got my black belt in that around like 12. And I started teaching a lot, and around like age 14, 15, I was like, I really love the sparring, and I really love the fighting with people, and I really wanted to try the mixed martial arts because I watched my UFC show like when I was like 14, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. And my parents were so against it, and they're like, no, you're never going to be a fighter. You're just going to be a martial artist. And I'm like, why? I was like, I didn't understand why they wouldn't let me. But one day my dad actually finally agreed. And I just looked up a local gym, and I started training since I was 15. And, I've gotten a lot of shit from it, being a prettier girl in the mixed martial arts. You know, they're like, don't you not want to mess up your face? I'm like, listen, there's plastic surgery for a reason, if I ever get hurt.
And I love it. I absolutely love it.
I was like, why can't the pretty girls fight? I was like, why do they have to be, like, I don't believe every woman fighter, and there's not all women fighters are the type of, dress like a guy, look like a guy. You know, there's also a lot of other pretty girls, like Wanda, Ika, Tina, and, and I'm sure they get shit for it, too. I hear it. But I think the pretty girls should take over mixed martial arts.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm a man, and I'm okay with that. And I was gonna say I support a pretty girl being a mixed martial artist. I mean, there's tons. I mean, Felice Herrig I think is a pretty girl. I think Ronda Rousey is a pretty girl. I think there's a lot of attractive women that are mixed martial artists, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think and actually, you don't want to mess up your face. You don't want to mess up your face because you're not going to get hit in the face. Is that correct?
Exactly. You keep your hands up for a reason.
That's right. You keep your hands up for a reason. You just had your first professional mixed martial arts fight just about a month ago, right? It was like on the 18th, right?
It was June 29th. So.
Oh, I was way off. So you're about 2 weeks ago. Okay. tell me. I mean, I saw some great. There's a video of you walking out to your first fight. Whoever did that video, they did an incredible job. Take me through, as you're standing there in the back and they're about to announce your name, you can see on your face you're clearly excited and pumped up for the fight. Was there any nerves? Were you nervous at all? Take me through that minute as those doors are about to kick open and they're going to announce your name and you're going to walk into the cage for the first time. And Cheyenne, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the line with me tonight, but I think you got a bright future, and I think we're going to see a lot more of you. I just want to know that first minute when you are going to walk into that cage, how does that feel?
I wasn't nervous at all. It was kind of like a relief walking out there because, after all the training and how many years I've been waiting to fight, it was almost, unreal. to me, I guess. And then when I got it, I was just so pumped for that fight, and I can't really describe how I felt. I was not nervous at all. I had a lot of pressure on me, though, for that fight, but it was more like I was just win or lose for that. I was just so happy to be even be fighting, and especially be fighting someone that skilled for my first fight. I mean, it sucked to be fighting someone that skilled for my first fight, but I was just, I felt honored. And, like, walking out there, I just kept thinking about all the training, all the years that I put in to fighting, and I was just like, I'm finally starting my career. And I did take a loss by decision, and good job to her, but when they asked me on the mic, like, how I was feeling, I was very emotional for losing, because I never want to lose, but only thing I could tell them was, my opponent, her career is not going anywhere, and I just started. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what to say to them, but that's how I felt.
Cheyenne, let me jump in. This is Matthew. I host Cage Zombies Radio, which is another MMA Madhouse Productions, and I was actually at the fight site. We met briefly. You were busy that night, and I don't like to mess with fighters on fight night, but we met very briefly. I was just actually just waiting to ask you about that. Like, you know, each round, both of you guys came out, like, hands up, ready to go. You showed relentless heart. I gave you mad respect on that. No disrespect to you, but why did you say that to her? Because that's exactly what I was going to ask is, you know, she's a fairly accomplished, you know, opponent. She's been an Olympic wrestler. She's done a lot in her career. And I was actually very surprised because you showed nothing but class and respect up to that point. And as an outside view, that's kind of a disrespectful comment. But as you just said, you know, the fight's just in you. You're very emotional. Adrenaline's running high. Everything's kind of spinning real fast for you. And, you know, what were you thinking as you said that to her?
When I said that, it was more because it wasn't because her skill. Her skill is great. And she's 33 years old, and it's an amateur fight. And honestly, she should not even be an amateur. She is pro level. And if she does make it, you see all the older fighters who are ending their career in the late 30s. I mean, she's early 30s, but, you know, I didn't mean for it to come off disrespectful because I never would respect anyone. And if it did, I apologize. But, you know, just if she wanted to build her career, she should have gone state pro because she does have the skill for it with her wrestling. So.
Hey, Cheyenne, I want to know, to be honest with you, I watched the fight over. Did you get points taken away? I can't remember if you got points taken away.
Did I?
Yeah.
She did. I didn't. I got
Ingrid had 1 point taken away.
Right. She kicked you. I can't remember exactly. I watched the fight over, and I can't remember exactly how the point came down. So just walk me through that, would you please, so I can refresh my memory?
For when we got the points taken off?
Mm-hmm.
What happened was first round, the bell rung. We both came out swinging. I knocked her down. I took her back. I couldn't get both my hooks in. I slid over to my guard up against the cage. She started punching me in the body, and I blocked it, and then she started ground and pounding me in the face. The ref stopped it, backed up, and he told her, he's like, warning. That's your only warning. And then next thing you know, she got a takedown. I went for side mount, and I was up against the cage on the ground. And next thing you know, she started punching me in the face again, worse. And so I kicked her off me, and I yelled. I was like, don't touch me. And I don't know why I said that, to be honest. And when I kicked her off me and I started yelling because, you know, she started doing it again. And I was like, are you serious? And then the ref went over to her, and then he came over to me, and he told me, he was like, I'm going to disqualify her. And I was like, then why don't you? And he was like, let me do my job. And I was like, she just did this twice to me. And I was like, okay. And then he came over to me again, and he was like, I'm going to disqualify you if you kick her off me. And I was like, in my adrenaline, I was like, all right. And, you know, I think that kind of just, like, blew me off after the first round, because after that, I kept letting her get the takedowns, and I was just so overwhelmed. And her punching me in the face and fighting, she caught dirty a little bit, clearly won, and I was just like, wow.
You guys had a kind of a standoff, or it looked like a heated confrontation, actually, at like a wing house or something the night before, the couple nights previous. Is that correct?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Something, we ran into each other. I was there with the WCFL promoter and my coaches and my mother. And next thing you know, Ingrid shows up with her husband and her kid. And they're like, oh, we have to do a face-off. And I'm like, okay, you know, I was like, it's 2 weeks before the fight. I was like, I don't care. And so I go over to her. But when I was walking over to her, Ralph, the promoter of WCFL, said, Ingrid said no touching. I was like, I wasn't going to touch her. And I was like, okay. And so I would go over to her. And I was like, hello. And I was like, smiling like always. And she spot my hand down and put her fist in my face. Started, like, pushing me. So I was like, okay. I just stayed calm. You're breaking
Hello?
Up. I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah. Absolutely, I can hear you.
Oh, yours is all staticky.
Carl, is there any... I static too, Carl. Is there anything you can do about the connection?
I'm not sure what's going on, to tell you the truth. I'm working on it.
All right.
I know this is you guys' show. I don't want to impose, but Cheyenne, while he's working on the connection, Cheyenne came out. She fought a great fight. Her and Ingrid put on a phenomenal fight that night for the WCFL fans. Cheyenne showed a lot of heart, a lot of respect to her. I asked about that comment she made post-fight, but I know she meant no disrespect. You know, she's a young girl, got a lot of heart, got a lot of passion, going to have a huge future in this fight. Ingrid as well. Ingrid has accomplished so much already in this field. You know, she's an Olympic wrestler, but these girls put on a great fight, and Cheyenne's a great young fighter with a great career ahead of her.
Okay. Cheyenne, let me ask you a question. Where do we go from here now, Cheyenne? You fight your first fight. You're in the gym training. Have you signed a contract? Are you locked up anywhere? I know you said you're fighting in August. So explain to me the next, your upcoming road, I guess.
Just, I take it day by day, step by step. You know, I'm just training hard for my next fight, whoever my next opponent is. And then after that, I'll see what happens. No contract signed right now.
Okay.
A few sponsorships, but that's it.
Did you say you're fighting in October?
August.
You're fighting in August.
24.
I'm sorry. August 21st. Do you have an opponent yet?
They found me this one. They found me two girls, but I denied them both. Not because I think that they're great. It's just fact I fought my first fight against a 33-year-old, and the strength difference was very, very big difference. And I would like to fight someone more my age for the next fight, because I would like to see how I do with not who it needs to be 18, but, you know, someone closer to my age and my experience level. It had very much experience, and, you know, that was my very first one. And so I would find me someone closer to my age and my experience, or no experience, because I would love to see how I do with someone like that. And then when I have a few fights, then I will build my way up to the older ladies again.
You know, Cheyenne, that's a very interesting question, or a very interesting response. Do you feel that being younger, I'm like towing the line. I think I could lean either way in this. I think your inexperience and your youthfulness is going to take you a long way. The other night you and I talked a little bit on Twitter, and you cannot teach aggression. You can't teach someone to want to go in and punch somebody in the face. You can give them a black belt in Muay Thai or Jiu-Jitsu or whatever, but you can't teach someone that aggression. You have that aggression. Do you feel like your youthfulness is an asset or a liability in your game right now?
Good question. It's just, I was born to fight, and, you know, I'm very sweet, humble, but when it comes to the fighting, I just
I agree with you.
And I think only some people have that to them. I know tons of people that I train with that don't have that and who are fighters, you know. My training partner is actually fighting Ingrid this Saturday, and she doesn't have any aggression towards her. And I told her, I said, you know, you need to go out there and you want to see blood. That's what you want to see. And some people, you know, some people don't have that. But you're either born a fighter or raised or made a fighter.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I agree with that 100%. I couldn't agree any more with that statement. And, I'm looking back, and I forget that you are you're one fight into your professional career. And really, truly, I see you everywhere. I see you on, Inside MMA and Babes of MMA, and I see you all over the place. You're a pretty girl. You're so very marketable. You're a sweet girl. But then, you know, I see those pictures of you and Ingrid at the wing house or whatever, and I'm just like, God damn, this girl is going to tear somebody's head off. And I want to, like, age you, like, 6 years and make you, like, 23 or 24 and just watch you just run through people. So I'm very excited for your career. And I'm really, to be honest with you, I'm very kind of honored that, you know, this is the second time you and I have got a chance to talk. And I'm excited to see your career is in the very infancy stage. And I really am excited to see where you're going from here. You have so many opportunities. I'm just going to ask this question. You clearly have sex appeal. Is there anything that, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful because I'm not saying, you know, Playboy and all, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is Felice Herrig does a great job. I think she's a very pretty girl. I think she does a great job as a fighter. I think she does a great job, portraying herself as a pretty woman. Is that something that you really want to carry on? Because I think, to be honest, when I talked to you the other night on Twitter and I said, I really believe that you're going to do big things. I'm not bullshitting. I'm not just saying that because, you know, I wanted you to get you back on the radio. I really believe that. But I also really believe that you absolutely have an opportunity to do, you know, you can branch out in a fight game. You can branch out in modeling. Is that something that you're interested in doing? I went from my ass to get to my elbow on that question, but is that something that you're interested in doing?
Don't get me wrong. I love modeling. I used to do some, but it was never my thing. I'd rather
Okay.
my training clothes. But, I mean, I'm actually doing a shoot next week for sports modeling with the fighting. And, you know, that's what I like to stick to. Talking about Felice Herrig, she's a very pretty girl. And she is into the very sexual pictures and everything. And I don't like that. I like her, but I don't like that. I believe if you are a true fighter, yeah. Everyone's different, and I don't judge. She's type to, you know, she loves the fighting, and then she loves being the sexy girl, because she is. But me, I'd rather be the sexy fighter type. And
sure.
That's what I like.
Shia, please don't get my words twisted. I was not trying to insinuate that you were, I was not trying to be disrespectful to you. I really was just saying you have so many avenues and so much to do. I mean, you have a shoot coming up, and then you're going to fight a couple weeks later. I think you have, I don't know if you know this. I guess this is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to wrap it all up in a nice ball here. I think you have the world in the palm of your hand right now as far when it comes to what you have an opportunity to do. You can be a fighter. You can do photo shoots. You can, you know, you're a very sweet girl. You know, you could be a teacher. You have so much, and I'm excited for your career. I really just want you to, you know, just sit back and say, you know what, I've done a lot at 18 years old. When I was 18, I'm going to be real honest with you, I don't even know what the hell I was doing. I think I was worried about, I don't know, scratching lotto tickets or something. You know what I mean? But you're doing great things. That's kind of what I wanted to say. But,
thank you.
I gotta ask this question. July 1st on Facebook, it says you changed your relationship status. You are now in a relationship with Tony. I don't know his last name. Is he a fighter? How did you guys meet?
Yes, he fought the same night as I did. We've actually been dating for a while, but we're on Facebook because I like to, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, she has a boyfriend, she's not into her training. But I was like, oh, well, I guess I should just put it up. But we actually trained together. So.
You know, Cheyenne, nothing happens, nothing is official until it happens on Facebook. So, I mean,
exactly.
You guys
have to be Facebook.
So he's a fighter as well, so he trains as well. He understands the fighter lifestyle. All right, Sarah.
Yeah.
Cheyenne, before I let you go, listen, I apologize. We kind of got jammed up with some, with some technical difficulties and whatever. I just really wanted to get you back on. I wanted to talk a little bit. I'm really supportive of your career. I'm gonna, you know, we're gonna push you here on MMA Madhouse. We think you're doing great things. We want to get you back on after your next fight. How's that?
That sounds great. I love being on. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Before we let you go, Shane, you can't get off that easy. I need you to do me two favors. I need you to say say your last name for me.
Bellissimus.
Okay. I need you to say this is Cheyenne Bellissimus, and you're listening to Full Guard Fight Radio on MMA Madhouse. I need you to say that for me. Can you do that? Would you do that for me? Because when you become the UFC heavyweight or women's champion, I want to say, you know what? This woman was on my radio show, so I want to have that.
Okay. So what is it? You're listening to Full Guard?
This is Cheyenne. I'm on Full Guard Fight Radio, MMA Madhouse, whatever else you want to say. Pound salt, bitches. I don't care what you say.
Okay. This is Cheyenne Blissmuth on Full Guard Fight Care? Is that what it is? Fight Care?
Sure. That's fine.
Wait, no, we got this. Wait.
Full Guard Fight Radio.
Full Guard Fight Care. I think they get the point.
Cheyenne, I want you to do me one more favor. I want you to thank your sponsors, and I want you to tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and Facebook, okay?
Okay. Everything is my first and last name. Facebook is Cheyenne Bellissimus. Last name is spelled V-L-I-S-M-A-S. Twitter, same thing. Instagram, same thing. Everything is my name.
Do you have Pinterest?
No.
Oh,
I don't know what that is.
Damn it. My wife has Pinterest, and I want to get a fighter that says, my Pinterest name is this. So before you come on after your next fight, would you just look at Pinterest and say, make something up. I don't even care what it is. I'm just kidding with you, Cheyenne. Best of luck to you, honey. I really think you have the world in the palm of your hands. I think you are going to do great things as far as the MMA world and as far as, you know, just being your own entity, being your own business. So, Cheyenne, really, truly the best of luck to you. And when you're done with your next fight in August, I want you to come back on here. And I want to talk about it. I want to, you know, get the butterflies out of your first fight and now we're on to your second. So is that okay?
Yeah.
Cheyenne, best of luck to you. I will talk to you later, okay?
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Cheyenne.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cheyenne Bellissimus, I'm telling you right now, y'all, Carl's yelling at me behind the scenes. I know we got to go to Howard Davis Jr. I know we got to pay some bills, but I just got to say that young lady right there is going to do huge, huge things in the sport of MMA. I don't care if it's behind a camera. I don't care if it's in front of a camera. I don't care if it's, you know, teaching kids. I don't care if it's in a cage. That young lady, I'm telling you right now, follow that young lady everywhere she's at. She is going to be the future of MMA. Carl, I'm sorry. Go ahead and pay some bills, my friend.
Jax Media. Helping give fighters and fight promoters the edge to get noticed and pound through to success. At Jax Media, we know how difficult it can be to get sponsorships for your fights or fighters. Don't miss out on prime opportunities. Showcase your fight history, stats, bio, sponsorship rate, and clickable links to your online and social media platforms with a custom media kit. Media kits starting as low as $50. Also, ask about our custom Facebook page setup, apps, fighter and fight promotion websites, and more. Visit us online today at www.jaxmedia.ca. Jax Media, design with an edge.
Jax Media does all kinds of promotions, all kinds of multimedia stuff, all kinds of logos and banners and Facebook stuff. And I mean, Jax Media is just where it's at. We were supposed to have Jax on tonight. Jax is coming on next week with us. I can't wait to wrap my head around what he's doing. Jax Media is absolutely where it's at. I just want to kind of pitch our next guest a little bit before Carl gets him in. I'm very, very, very honored to have Howard Davis Jr. 1976 Olympic gold medal boxing champion. Let me say that again. 1976 Olympic gold medal boxing champion has taught some of the greatest in the sport of MMA, the craft of boxing, has done it all in the world of boxing, has been there, has seen that, has done that, has worked with them. You want to be a boxer, you go to Howard Davis Jr., and I'm so stoked to eventually get a chance to talk to Howard. He also is doing Fight Time Promotions down here in Florida. He's moved into the promoting business. We're going to talk to him about that a little bit. We're going to talk to him about being a boxer. We're going to talk to him about being a boxing coach. We're going to talk to him about just being a kid in 1976, fighting for the gold medal. So I'm very excited to talk to Howard. So as soon as we can get him on, we will do so. But before that, I think we're ready with Howard. I'm so very excited. Howard Davis Jr. Joining us on Full Guard Fight Radio. Howard, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine, and all the things that you said, we definitely got a lot to cover.
Absolutely. We had you a few times lined up and ready to go, and you're such a busy man. We couldn't tie it down. And when Carl said you were coming on tonight, and we had confirmation, I was like a kid in a candy shop. So I'm very, very excited to talk to you, Howard. How are you tonight, man? What are you doing on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock or 10 after 11?
Well, I just put my little baby daughter to bed. Actually, I did a little food shopping. I came home, put my daughter to bed, and now the house is quiet. So.
We're going to sit and talk. I appreciate you coming on with me tonight, Howard. I can't thank you enough. I have so much I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
Take me back to being a 20-year-old kid fighting in the 1976 Olympics for a gold medal in shortly after your mom passed away. Is that correct?
Well, no. My mother passed away while I was in the Olympics.
Jeez Louise.
It was 3 days before I had my... Well, I grew up in Glen Cove, Long Island, New York. Very humbling place. I grew up in the projects, but it was not like the projects of today. Everybody knew their neighbor. Everybody said hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I remember if a next-door neighbor would bring in groceries in the house, my father would make me go outside and help her, or help anybody, you know. So that's the kind of neighborhood I grew up in.
Absolutely.
People were actually knew their next door neighbors, you know. So very poor. Everybody was poor, of course. Growing up in the project, I'm getting some real bad static. Let's go on now. That's okay. That's okay. It's gone now. And I started with a very humbling background. I grew up in Glen Cove, Long Island. And at 17 years old, I entered the New York Golden Gloves. Had very little fights. Had 5 fights in New York Golden Gloves and won the New York Golden Gloves. And that was my novice year. My second year, I went in again as an open class, which means that you're a more experienced fighter. I won it again. And then I went in the third time. I won it again. And then I went in the fourth time, which was a history-making tournament at the time, because nobody ever won the New York Golden Gloves in the 50-year history at the time, 4 consecutive times. So I was the first to do it. There's some previous champions that won it after me, Mark Breland being one of them. He broke my record in 1982 or 1983. He broke my record. But up until that time, nobody had ever done it before, and I was the first to do it. And then that qualified me for the National AAU, which was held in Las Vegas at the time. I fought 6 times in 4 days. And in the finals, I fought Tommy Hearns. I beat him to go to the Olympic Trials. And in the Olympic Trials, I fought a gentleman by the name of Aaron Pryor. I had to fight him twice to make the team, to get a birth spot on the Olympic team. So the three-fight Olympics was much more harder. I won almost 22 fights in a row just to get on the team. If I'd have lost once out of those tournaments I was in, I never would have been on the team. And then when I got to the Olympics, and this is definitely in the history books, 3 days before I had my first fight, I got news that my mother had passed away. So I had to make a decision. My first decision was to go home. And then if it wasn't for my coach, Sarge Johnson, we called him Sarge because he was a military man. He was a sergeant in the Army. So everybody affectionately called him Sarge. If he didn't put his right hand on my left shoulder and look me dead in the eye and said, "What would your mother want?" I would have been on the plane already, because my mother's last words was, "Good luck." She pointed her finger in my face with a great big smile on her face and said, "You better bring home that gold medal." So that was resonant. That was really resonant with me, and I had to do it for her.
Man, holy cow, I got goosebumps, man. I'm from New York. I know the fighters in New York. In being a 4-time Gold Gloves champion in New York is just incredible. I mean, your Olympic team, when you make the Olympic team, you're Sugar Ray Leonard, Michael Spinks, and Leon Spinks, is that really the team that you were on?
Yeah, we had the Spinks brothers, which was the first in history to have 2 brothers. Nobody ever talks about this, but it's the first time in history that 2 brothers won the Olympics at the same time. One was a light heavyweight, and the other one was a middleweight. They was only 12 pounds apart in each weight class. So it was amazing. It was an amazing team. Sugar Ray Leonard, Spinks brothers, Leo Randolph, and myself won the gold medals. And then we had 1 silver, which was Charles Mooney, and 1 was bronze, which was John Tate, our heavyweight.
Man. And not only did you win an Olympic gold medal then, you won the Vail Baker Trophy at the 1976 Olympics too, beating out every boxer there. That's like the MVP. Is that correct? Like the Vail Baker Award is kind of like the MVP award, I guess, right?
Exactly. That's just where it's given to the most outstanding boxer of the whole Olympics in boxing. The last American to win it at that time, from what I read, I forget the boxer's name, and I really should know his name, was in 1952, from what I heard.
I don't know. I don't know if it's that.
Yeah. The last American boxer to win the Vail Baker Award was in 1952. And I have to get that gentleman's name. That's a very pivotal moment and American boxing, especially Olympic history, that to be that far apart from American boxer winning the Bob Barker Award. So I made history there, too.
And then you turned professional a year later, is that correct, Tony?
I turned professional in 1977, in January of 1977. I think it was January 16th or 17th, where I had my first fight in Las Vegas. I was really, really nervous. when you're amateur, you only go three rounds. But as a pro, you start out with four rounders or six rounders. I started out with a six rounder. And I fought a guy that had close to 70 fights. That was my first pro fight. A guy that had he had 40 losses, close to 70 fights, 30-something wins. But he had, you know, even though he had a lot of losses, he had 30 more wins than I did. So that was a little worrying and nerve-wracking to me. I was so nerve-wracking, I had lost my mouthpiece one day before my fight. So I had to go to a drugstore and get one of those, or sports store, get one of those mouthpieces you had to stick into boiling water.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, back then in 1977, that you can't get like a nice fitted mouthpiece in like a day like you can now, right?
No, you know, it took about 2 weeks because I had a professional mouthpiece made by a dentist, and it took about 2 weeks to get a mouthpiece. So I knew I didn't have a dentist there like on hand that could make me one right away. So I had to go to a sports store to get it. And
yeah, absolutely.
I had to do it the old-fashioned way.
So you lose your mouthpiece. You get one from – you stick it in a cup of boiling water. You stick it in your mouth. And this is the day before your professional debut?
Actually, it was the day of the fight. It was the day of the fight. I could not find my mouthpiece.
No, okay.
So that's
Did you ever find it after that, Howard?
You
never found it. Was it like stuck in like the side of the car, the side of the car seat or anything like that?
No, we never found it. I must have left it in the gym, or maybe I stuck it in the bag and didn't zip it up and fell out.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know what happened to it, but I lost it, and I didn't realize it until that morning of the fight, the day of the fight, that it was gone.
No kidding. So you get your mouthpiece, you get into your first fight, you're nervous, you tell me. This guy has 30 more, what did you say, 30 more wins than, I'm sorry, what did you say, 30 more wins than you have fights, right?
He had close to close to 70 fights.
75, okay.
He lost about 40 fights, but he won about 30-something. So he had 30 more wins than I did. So I was extremely nervous, and I remember... You know, I was kind of tall for a lightweight. I weighed 135.
Sure.
5'10" as a lightweight. This guy was 5'6", and he had no neck. I remember I hit him. His neck, like most guys, you hit him in the face, they'll move, their neck move or something. This guy never moved, never blinked. You know, and I'm not an extremely hard puncher. I wasn't known for my knockouts, even though I had 14 knockouts out of, 40-something fights. Every time I hit this guy, I hurt my hands.
It's like hitting concrete.
Yeah, man. He had such a small neck. He had no neck, and every time I hit him, he just wouldn't budge.
Man, oh, man. But Howard, you go on to win your next 26 fights, right? So you're 26-1 when you're fighting for the lightweight title. Is that correct?
That's the second time I fought for the title is when I was 26-1. The first time I fought for the title was in Scotland.
Okay.
I lost I lost a 15-round unanimous decision, which I thought I won. But I fought him in Scotland, his hometown. And I never complain. You know, if it's a close decision, it's close. The judge see it one way, and there's nothing you really can do about it. So I never cry over spilt milk, but I thought I won that.
Can I ask you just a follow-up question? I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but I just kind of want to.
That's okay.
I want to get in a fighter's mind because I've never been in a boxing ring. I've never been in an MMA cage. Do you know when you're in a fight, a 15-round fight, and you just said to me, "I thought I won that fight." How as you're going through that fight, are you just, you know, is there a time that you're taking your foot off the gas and you're just gonna do some work, or are you just kind of moving and take me through a 15-round fight that you feel that you win, and then at the end you lose a unanimous decision. I've never been in a fight, so I'm not trying to say anything other than I just don't know. I mean, this is a very ignorant question. I just really, as you're in the fight, are you doing different things because you feel like you're winning that fight, or are you pushing forward all the time?
Well, you know, there's always ebbs and flows throughout a fight, you know. I just thought that I had control of the fight. I give you an example. You know, when you're fighting somebody in their hometown, even if they hit you with a feather, the crowd will just go crazy.
So that's true, yeah. That's
he was missing me, hit me on my arms sometime, and the crowd was going nuts. I mean, he would throw like four or five punches, miss me with all of them. I come back and hit him with two, and you say to yourself, man, what do I need to do to win, you know? But, you know, you got to expect that when you're fighting. And it was almost 30,000 people in this big stadium. And, man, you like I said, every time he threw a feather at me, the crowd went nuts. So anything I did was negated, you know. I just believe that. I think sometimes the judge would get swayed by the crowd, you know. But I went 15 rounds, and it seemed like forever. You know, it seemed like forever. I remember going into the ninth round. I asked my father what round we're going into. He said the ninth, and I said, "Oh my God, I got six more rounds to go." I couldn't believe it. You know,
yeah.
But not that I was tired or anything. I was in tremendous condition. But you know, when you're going that long, 15 rounds, it seems like a very long time. You're actually fighting for 45 minutes.
Man,
that's close to an hour, you know.
Yeah. Let me ask, when you're fighting and you come in between rounds, is there any time you actually, you know, I see it all the time. I feel like I see it all the time, but maybe I'm just ignorant to this. Do you guys ever just, when you're clenched, is it just like, man, you talking to each other like, my man, I'm beat. Can we take a break for a couple seconds so I can catch my breath? Is there ever any of that kind of banter back and forth? Or is it like, man, we got to work?
I remember, God, this is my last year in the Gold Glove, 1976. And it was, I was very hungry. It was, I know that every fight was important. I had to win every fight. Because I was trying out for the Olympics. So it was my first fight in the 1976 Golden Gloves. I knocked this guy down. I knocked him down again in the second round. And then I knock him down again in the third round. And then when he gets up, we get into a clinch. I never forget what he said to me. He says, "Take it easy on me, or I will kill you after the fight." So I looked at him. I looked at him with this serious face. In the clinch, I said, "Now you must fall," and I end up knocking him out. And the next couple, he came to me after the fight and apologized. He said, "I didn't really mean it." He said, "You beat me so bad, I just wanted you to stop." So, some guys talk.
I just can't imagine for fighting for 45. I mean, that is straight. I mean, that's fight time. That's not 45 minutes, like, including the time in between rounds. That's, you guys are fighting for 45 minutes. You need to be just absolutely drained. I just can't imagine that, you know, you guys aren't holding each other up by, like, round, like, oh, for me, round, like, two. I'm holding you up in the corner being like, my man, we, you know, let's just take it easy a little bit. Let's just, like, you know. I mean, you guys are fighting for 45 minutes. This is, were you just as exhausted as you've ever been?
No, actually, I wasn't exhausted. But I can understand the layperson looking outside the ring, looking in. He might say to himself, man, I could never do that. But everything is relative to what you want to do. And what I mean by that, if you decide that you want to be a cliff diver,
sure.
I can't see myself. I could never see myself jumping off a cliff. But other people that themselves and have the mentality to do that, this is something they're committed to, and this is something they train for. So you're able to do it because this is something you want to do, and you dedicate yourself to it. And the operative word really is dedicate and commit. And I think when I look back on it now in retrospect, I can't believe I boxed, because here you got somebody throwing punches at your head and your face, trying to knock you out. It doesn't make sense to me. I look back at it now, but I was committed to what I was doing, so it made sense to me then. It doesn't make much sense to me now. I'm 57 years old now. I can't see myself doing that now. I can't even see. I don't even know why I did it. The way I look at it now, it's insane. But the word is, once you commit yourself to something, then you don't. You know the dangerous. You know it's dangerous, but it's in the back of your mind. It's always in the back of your mind, never in the forefront. Because if it's in the forefront, you wouldn't do it.
Sure.
So it's all little. You gotta have that little fear, and I think that's what makes somebody that's doing something that's very dangerous, like somebody that's walking on a tightrope, and that's a very dangerous thing. But they know it's dangerous. Yeah. It's always in the back of their head, in their mind. But you got to keep that in the back of your mind. If it comes in the forefront of your mind, and you're consciously thinking about it, the likelihood of you falling probably is greater.
Is greater, yeah, absolutely.
Hope that makes sense.
No, it absolutely makes 100%. I mean, it makes so much sense to me, and I know exactly what you're saying. And I know we have so much to talk about. I mean, you're doing so many more things, and you know, I only have you for so long, but I just gotta know. I mean, you're fighting in the Olympics. You're doing all this stuff. You are the man. When it comes to boxing, I mean, your record is impeccable. Your career is incredible. I mean, you're a Hall of Famer down here in the state of Florida. I just, you know, what is the number one thing that you remember outside of the Olympic gold medal? What is the what do you step back and look and on the outside looking into your boxing career? What do you say, that was me? I did that. I am so proud of what.
I think I'm more proud that I worked and dedicated and committed myself so extremely hard. I mean, there's two kind of consciousness, and I kind of glossed over it just a little bit. There's the subconscious and there's the conscious. You know you're working hard to achieve a goal, but you don't really realize that until you retire and look back in retrospect at the things that you did. And I used to get up, I was so dedicated and so committed to what I did, I went to bed 8:30 every single night for 5 years.
Jeez.
5 years in a row, I went to bed 8:30 and woke up at 4:30 in the morning. I ate breakfast at the same time every single day. And when I turned pro, I did the same thing. So I was really committed. Now, I'll tell you how committed I was. I remember when I was single, I was 21 years old, I was dating this girl, and I said to her, I said, look, you know, and next week I'm going into training, so I won't see you for 6 weeks. And this girl lived in Baltimore, Maryland at the time.
Okay.
I lived in New York. So my second week into training, my doorbell rings around 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm saying to myself, man, who could this be? Nobody rings on my door 2 o'clock in the morning. It was this girl that drove up from Baltimore. Never thought she was coming. I sent her home that night. It was cold that night. That's how dedicated I was. I said, no, you cannot sleep here. I didn't ask you to come here. I told you I was in training. I put you in a hotel. You sleep in a hotel. I gave her some money to go in the hotel. I gave her some food money, and I gave her some gas money. And I never saw that girl again. I never saw that girl again because, to me, that was the wrong kind of person to be with.
Now, Howard, let me ask you a question, and this is just very much off the topic. And I mean, at 21 years old, I got a girl knocking on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I'm not sure which head I'm thinking with. You know what I'm saying, Howard? And you are absolutely doing the right thing. I mean, you were at 21 years old. You're a grown man. I'm a child. Just incredible. RuPauler. I mean, so you never see this girl again, and then did you ever look back and say, maybe I should have brought her in, or was that exactly what you wanted to, I mean, that's exactly where you wanted to go?
I'm a true believer in that if you do something sometime, that means you'll win sometime or you'll lose sometime. I'm definitely a proponent of being consistent and committed. If you're committed most of the time you're going to win. And if you lose, it's only because the guy was better than you and you have no faults or anything to say the reason why you lost. You know, you did the best you can. You got in the best kind of condition you can. And if you lost, you say, hey, he was better than me. And then there's no shame in that. But if I know I did wrong and I was half committed and I get beat, the reason why I lost is because I was half committed. But if I stay focused throughout my whole, training regimen, and I eat right and I go to bed early, then if I lose, it's because the guy was better than me. Or maybe I made a mistake in the ring. But it definitely wasn't because I saw some girl in the middle of the night. I'll never lose that.
Yeah. Man, I just can't. At 21 years old, I just think back to what I was doing at 21. I think I was... I don't even know what the hell I was doing at 21 years old. It was definitely not turning away young ladies knocking on my door at 2 a.m. and me training to be the greatest in the world. It's something that I love to do. I mean, that's
well,
incredible.
If you're making $200,000 a fight, which I was at that time, there's a certain commitment. There's a certain commitment that you should have. I'm not saying all fighters have it, but I did, and I didn't play around. You can ask all my friends that wanted to hang out with me. They knew when I went into training, we hung out no more. To this day, I never took any drugs. To this day, I don't know what alcohol tastes like. And not because I was an athlete. It's because I've seen so many people go to the wayside because of drugs, alcohol, and a certain deviant lifestyle. And I've learned my lessons just by watching, not experiencing. Just by watching and learning from friends and some relatives, believe it or not.
Howard, I mean, I could sit and talk all day amateur, professional boxing. I mean, I want to move forward. I mean, I know you got so many other things in your repertoire. And, I mean, you go from you retire in '96. Is that correct?
Well, I retired the first time in '88, and then I came back 5 years later in '93.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I retired in '96. Yeah.
Take me through when you decide to hang it up. I mean, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I watch some of my heroes growing up. I watch them retiring, and you know, all of them are retired now. I just know that they struggled with that. Was that something that you struggled with? I mean, especially retiring and then making a comeback. Is that something you struggled with in that time?
Actually, I did not. When I retired, I was glad I retired. I made up my mind. I didn't have the desire to get up 4:30 in the morning, and I still did it, but I still didn't have that same fire. And once I lost that fire, then I said, hey, you know, it's time for me to hang up. Because when you lose fire and have passion for something that you do, and you lose that passion, then that's when things start getting a little funky. You can start getting hurt. You start getting hit more. And one of the things I've always said to myself, if I get hit more than 3 times hard in a round, then it's time for me to retire. Thank God it never got to that. It never got to that. But I've always said to myself, if I ever got hit 3 times in a round, then that's it for me.
I gotta ask you kind of a self-serving question. Have you ever been in a fight and this dude across the ring from you was working so hard and he thinks he's got you all tied up and you know he thinks he's got you on your heels and you were just thinking in your head, this dude hits like, you know, my aunt. You know, he's not even hurting me. And this. Have you ever just been like kind of in your head like laughing and being like, this guy's a chump? I mean, because to me, I don't know if I can hold that back. I might just start laughing. I see. You know, you're involved in MMA. You see Anderson Silva doing some of that stuff. And he got caught against Chris Weidman. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He's the greatest, I feel, the greatest striker in MMA, period. And he gets caught hanging his hands and, you know, doing some of that showboat stuff. Did that ever come to you, or were you just all business all the time?
Well, one of the things I've always had is a great amount of respect for my opponent. There's times where I've done a bolo punch, but I always made sure that I knew I had this guy, you know?
Yes.
If I lost the first round, I definitely wouldn't do it until I knew I had this guy solved. Once I had somebody solved, then every now and then you can play around a little bit. But
sure.
One of the things that I've never, ever disrespected myself in terms of not training to the standards that I know I should be at. Irregardless who I was fighting, I know that I might have a lot of ammunition going into a fight more than my opponent. I still trained hard. I still, you know, ran in the morning hard like I did for every opponent. I never took anybody lightly, even though I knew I could beat somebody. I never took anybody for granted. And watching the Anderson Silva fight, I think he might have took this guy for granted. This guy was undefeated. And when somebody's undefeated, they're not undefeated for a reason. And he should have took that into consideration. And from what I heard, this guy was an unbelievable striker, unbelievable puncher. So when somebody punches hard, the respect factor has to go up a little bit more.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect segue because I want to take you into your MMA career. I mean, you retire in 1996. You move forward. How do you get involved in MMA? I mean, how do you get involved in mixed martial arts? Do you meet up with somebody that says, Howard, teach me?
Well, I had a fantastic job in New Jersey. I moved to New Jersey in 1985. I had a fantastic job as a computer technician, making good money.
Really?
Yeah, I was having a good time and really enjoyed my job. Tedious work, but nothing hard, you know. Putting in mainframe computers and learn the technology of how to put phone systems in. And it's a wonderful job. I really enjoyed what I was doing. But at times you do get laid off. You get laid off maybe a week until another job comes up and they call you and say, hey, Howard, could you travel here? We have another job for you, blah, blah, blah. So there's times I'd be laid off. The most I ever got laid off was a week.
But okay.
For the most part, you get laid off for 2 or 3 days after a job is finished. They call you again, and you go to another job site, and you're back to work again.
Sure.
But in between getting laid off, I get a call from a friend of mine. He says, Howard, I have a job that you might like. I said, what is that? He said, well, there's a MMA camp in Coconut Creek, Florida, called American Top Team. And I mentioned their name. I mentioned your name to them, and they asked me to call you. I said, to do what? He said, well, you know anything about mixed martial arts. I've seen the embryo stages of the UFC when it was, you know, one guy had one. You can hit somebody in the nuts and you know, one guy was weighing, another guy was weighing 175 pounds. He said, "No, it's no longer like that anymore." He said, "These guys need a striking coach." I said, "Well, what are they paying?" So he told me what they were paying. I said, "No way. There's no way to take that. I'm making close to $100,000 here in New Jersey, and it's not going to be wear and tear on my body." He said, "But the amenities that I had was unbelievable. I could travel anywhere in the world for free. Room and board was for free. They gave me a brand new car every 3 months. So that made the difference in terms of my expenses. So I said, "Well, let me try it out for a week. If I don't like it, I'm coming back home to New Jersey." So I told my boss, I said, "Look, you know, I'm going to try this out for a week. This is something I really love doing. This is, you know, always been my heart, training fighters. And I always believe that if you do something long enough that you love, eventually you'll make money at it." My father always said that to me. He says, "You do something you love, eventually you'll make money at it."
Yep.
So I said, "All right, I'll come down." I came down for a week. When I came down in New Jersey, it was 4 below 0. I'll never forget that. And it just had snowed. And I came down here. When I pulled my coat off at the airport and down here in Florida, Fort Lauderdale.
Yep.
I got off the plane, and it was 82 degrees, no humidity, beautiful, not a cloud in the sky. After 3 days, I knew what I wanted to do. So I called my boss up. I said, "Look, you know, I'm down here. I'm going to try to make this work." He told me, he said, "Howard, if you want your job back, you can always get it back. We enjoyed having you here. He was a hard worker. And anytime you want your job back, you have it." So that was 10 years ago. I really enjoyed my tenure at American Top Team at Coconut Creek with Dan Lambert, Ricardo Laborio, and all the fantastic fighters at American Top Team. I don't want to mention anybody's name because I don't want to leave anybody's name out. Just out of respect to the fighters.
No, I respect that, but I'm going to mention somebody because I got a friend that fights over there, and by the name of Hector Lombard, and that man hits like a ton of bricks, and I know.
Oh my God!
I know you had your hand in that a little bit, Howard. So I got to say that man has concrete for hands. So you've done an incredible job with ATT in Coconut Creek, Florida. So. You don't have to say it, I will do it, but I know you know that he hits like a ton of bricks.
He hits more like a ton of bricks. You know something? You see how built he is? You see how he's built up all these muscles that he
absolutely.
Got?
Absolutely.
I never see him lift weights.
Really?
No, he doesn't lift well. Every now and then I'll see him do chin-ups or pull-ups. Every now and then. But I never see him lift weights.
Man, that move from 185 to 170, I think, I know he wants to stay at 185, but, I think let's get him down to 170, and he's going to dominate 170, honestly. But he's just too big and strong to not be a dominant force. And I'm speaking, you're not speaking on this, I am, because he's a friend, and so I'm not putting you in a bad spot. I don't want to do that because that's not what I want to do. But I feel Hector's going to do big things. I mean, that guy, honestly, he hits like a freight train, and he always has. And, you know, it's going to take him a little bit to find his groove at 170, but I'm fully prepared to say right now that he's going to be a force to be reckoned with there.
I think Hector, on his first couple of fights, you know, went on a bigger stage than he was previously. I'm not going to name the previous MMA promotion that he was with. But I think once he got into the UFC, I think that was a grandiose stage, and he might have gotten a little nervous, you know?
Absolutely.
Hector, he's one of those kind of fighters that can do it all. And I think once he understands his niche as a fighter in the UFC, I think he's going to be somebody to reckon with. Really.
Agreed. So let me ask you. So you're coming out here, you stay, you know, you don't go home 10 years ago. You get working with some of the, I mean, you worked with the creme de la creme of strikers in the UFC. I mean, Chuck Liddell, you want to talk about a guy that hits like a Mack truck. I mean, this guy's knocking dudes out from, you know, from way back. How do you go?
Let me say this about Chuck before you even go into. Chuck is the most humblest guy of any I've ever met.
I've met Chuck a few times, and I'm not trying to interrupt you, and I want you to elaborate,
right,
please, because I love this, but I met Chuck a couple times, and he's very soft spoken, very very reserved, very very pleasant to be around. I agree 100%.
And very gracious. I'm gonna tell you, when I trained him, I stayed in his house for almost 3 months training him.
Okay.
And every night we would go out to dinner, and somebody would recognize him. He never stuffed anybody from an autograph, even as he was putting food in his mouth. And I say, one time I said to him, I said, Chuck, man, I said you're a very humble guy. I said, I don't know if I could do what you do. And this goes on every single day that I was with the guy. He would never turn anybody down from an autograph. And I said, man, this guy, and to watch him around his children was unbelievable too. He loved his kids like you would not believe. Just very gracious and humble. And, you know, the second time I trained him, for his last fight, he says, what's your favorite kind of computer? I said, oh, man, I love the Mac. And we start talking about Macs. About 2 days later, he walks in with a box and says, hey, this is yours. I said, Chuck, you have to give me a Mac. I said, I want a Mac at home. He said, yeah, but you're going to need one here.
Man.
So that's how gracious he is.
Yeah, no, I can see that. When I met him, I was in New Jersey for John Jones, Mauricio Shogun, who 126, UFC 126 when Jones won the title. And I met him just in passing. We actually happened to be just walking by each other, and it was just like this surreal moment for me. You know, I'm like passing Chuck Liddell, and I was very starstruck. I mean, you know, I didn't fawn over him, but you know, I just was like, you know, Mr. Liddell, it's a pleasure to meet you. He couldn't have been nicer. He was just very, you know, very reserved, and you know, just I could tell that. I could tell that he was, you know, just a good person and a good family man. I hear him, you know, talk about, you know, his children all the time. Every time I hear him, he's always talking about his kids. So
the UFC was down here a couple months ago. And he called me up and said, hey, Howard, I want you to come have dinner with me and my wife. And I just had a little baby girl. So I drove to Sunrise, Florida here. And we had dinner, and he had this beautiful little daughter who was only, I think, maybe a couple months old at the time. And I'm like, wow, this guy is unbelievable. He had his wife there. And we just chewed the fat about, you know, the UFC and some of the fighters that are up and coming and what's going on at American Top Team. And I was telling him that I'm a promoter now, and he knew about it already, and I didn't even know that he knew. But he already knew about it, and they started asking me questions about that. We just had a good time, you know?
So you become a striking coach in the UFC. People come to you. I mean, you're sought after to work as a boxing coach in the UFC. You know, walk me through that a little bit. Is that different now? I mean, these gloves are, sometimes 7 to 11 ounces lighter, than the gloves you're working with? Is that something you have to adjust, or is it just all
when the guys, when I'm working with these fighters, these MMA fighters, they never use the 4 ounce gloves. Let's make that clear.
Okay. All right.
I know.
Here I am being ignorant, Howard. I'm sorry, brother.
That's okay. I would never allow them to use those kind of gloves, hitting the mitts with. Because
right.
if they miss and hit me, then it's going to definitely be a problem. So I always ask them to use. I always ask them to use either 10 ounce, 8 ounce, 12 ounce, or 14 ounce. So those preferred gloves that I would like the MMA fighters to use. But no, it was a pleasure and an honor to work with all these fighters at American Top Team. I really enjoyed the tenure there. The MMA fighters are some of the most humblest fighters that you ever want to meet. It just was a joy. And, you know, it's one thing training a professional boxer who has some idea how to throw punches to somebody that maybe has a little inkling of how to throw a punch to teach them. A lot of these guys come as an empty vessel, meaning that they really knew nothing about striking. I think that's the hardest part about teaching anybody that knows nothing about striking. There are great trainers, but there are trainers that can show somebody that already knows how to throw punches or have some experience at fighting. That's one way. But to teach somebody from zero, which I've done most of the time, it's a very, very humbling experience doing that.
Is that the way you would prefer, is to teach somebody from zero, or do you want somebody to have a base to come in? Because I know, again, I'm a baseball player. That's what I did for my life. Is that something that you want to do, is teach somebody from zero? Because they don't have any bad habits. You don't have to correct anything. You can form this person.
Well, I'll give you an example. Rich Antonito.
Yes.
Okay. I started with him from nothing. He knew nothing about striking at all. And now he was one of my best pupils. I mean, really great striker, great defensively, great offensively, and he used it and balanced it with his MMA. Some of the guys don't really know how to do it. It's because it takes a little time to mix the striking in with the kicking, with the takedowns. You know, you really have to develop a certain skill level and a certain MMA IQ, if you will, to put all these genres into force, you know? And Rich Antonito and another guy was Pitbull Alves.
Yep.
Unbelievable striker. Started with me from nothing. A fantastic striker. And kickboxer also, in his own right. Great defensively and great offensively. And I'm very proud of him. I started with him with nothing. Dean Thomas, same thing.
Dean Thomas.
Jeff Munson, even though I started him with nothing, he still developed a lot of bad habits. But his striking did good. He did develop his striking much more better. Believe it or not, I got him 2 professional boxing matches, and he got 1 draw and he got 1 knockout. Believe it or not,
I
got to
be honest. Jeff Munson. Jeff Munson is a friend of the MMA Madhouse. Him and Carl and Skippy, they go way back. And Jeff Munson is always a friend of our entity here. So it's funny because, you know, when I talk to Jeff, we talk a lot of politics. We do. I mean, that man is. He's very intelligent and incredible outside of the boxing
enemy. Him and I talk about politics all the time.
Yeah,
and
he blows my mind, Howard.
We also talk about world, because I'm pretty astute on what he knows also. But I just don't go deep depth like he does. You know, I try not to go on the radio and talk about some of the things I know. But him and I talk about things like this all the time.
Howard, I got to be honest with you. I mean, we're going to talk about we're moving up in here to Fight Time Productions, or you know, your Fight Time promotion here. We're going to talk about that in a second. But I got to get you back on here. We got to talk. We got to get you, Jeff Munson, and I on here, and Skippy. We got to get a round table on here, just back and forth. This would be that would be great. Are you down with that?
Well,
because I know Jeff is down.
Well, my main thing is history, ancient history.
Yeah,
and
I'm down with that.
But it ties into what we're doing today, believe it or not. Some of the civilizations that started out with politics and with government and stuff like that, most of the governments around the world came into being because of some of these ancient governments. They're just an extension, if you will, of what the ancient government's already done. And believe it or not, the ancient governments, in particular the Sumerians, which is never taught in school, and I know the reason why they don't teach the Sumerian history in school. But that's another story.
Listen, Howard, I would be honored. We'll set it up outside of here. I don't want to talk about it now because I don't want to take away from what we're talking about now. But I want to set it up. We'll get this all out here. We'll just hammer it out. We'll figure out. You know what? We're going to solve world hunger on an episode of you, Jeff, myself. All right?
Okay.
Listen, I want to go from being a boxer. I want to go from being a boxer. An Olympic gold medalist to an MMA, the most sought after striking coach, to being a promoter of fights and, you know, the business, the behind the scenes. How does that transition? How does that happen, Howard?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. My wife at the time, we were dating, and I was training Richard Tenido for an upcoming fight in Orlando, Florida. So right after he fought, my wife and I sat in the audience and looked at the rest of the show. And my wife just blurted out of nowhere, like a crazy person, says, "We can do this." And I looked at her.
She got possessed.
Yeah. I said, "Do what?" She said, "You and I could put on MMA shows." I said, "Are you insane?" I said, "Sit down, relax, enjoy the rest of the show." She said, no, how I can do this? And she wouldn't stop talking about it. She would not stop talking about it. We got in the car, and she explained to me how we could do it. I said, "Carla, you know," I said, "this is not making sense. I don't know what you're talking about." And I left it alone. At the time, I got a call from Chuck Liddell to train him to go out to California. So after I finished training him, I stayed out there almost 2.5 months. I got back home. My wife had all the paperwork done. The company was already in place. The legal work was all done. I said, are you serious?" She says, "Howard, we need sponsors." So I looked at all the paperwork and I said, "Oh my God, everything's in place." I said, "All right, we're going to do this." So I went out and I just went out and got sponsors. And in six weeks' time, we had our first show. And guess who was our main event on my first MMA show?
I'm not even going to pretend like I know.
Jeff the Snowman Munson.
He fought his first fight,
Jason Guida. You know who Jason Guida is?
I do know who he is. Yes, absolutely I do.
Yeah, he has the most MMA fights than anybody in history.
Even ahead of Bob Sapp, which is incredible.
Yeah. They were the main event for my first fight. I had a full house, packed house, couldn't believe it. I had forgot some stools, So I had to go get the stools where so the fighters could sit down, so I had to leave the arena at the time. When I came back, there was a long line outside the arena. I said, oh, my God, I got scared. You know, I said, this is really happening, you know. I went inside, the place was packed. No seats anywhere, no, you know, standing room only. And my wife and I were so happy. That was our first show.
Yeah.
You know, didn't really make any money, but we paid our bills. And that was our initiation into Fight Time Promotions. And right now we're on our sixth show.
That was my next question. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's my fault. I apologize. What number show are we on, Rojo?
We're right on 16, August 23rd. We got Wagner Rocha fighting Randy Venezuela Barroso.
Now, let me ask
this
you.
This is a world championship fight. This is a world championship fight.
Is this the first world championship fight you guys are putting on, or no?
No, we had our first world championship fight was between Jeff the Snowman Munson against Tony Lopez.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know you guys. I didn't realize that was you behind the scenes there. All right.
That was our fight. And that was our first world title fight, ISKA, Fight Time Promotions world title fight. And it was the first time in the history of Florida two MMA fighters fighting for a world title that were heavyweights. So it was the first time two heavyweights fought each other for a world title. I'm very proud to say we were the first Fight Time Promotions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But right
so
now...
Go ahead. Right. No, the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah. Wagner Rocha is our world champion, Fight Time world champion, and he's defending his title against Randy Barroso. And Randy Barroso fought for Fight Time 5 times, and he's undefeated with a couple of knockouts, and mainly he's a submissionist. This guy, I've seen him do leg locks on 3 opponents, arm bar on another opponent. In his last fight, which was in June, he knocked somebody out with one punch. So this should be an unbelievable fight. Wagner Rocha, in my opinion, is probably one of the best fighters on the ground there is. He's a submissionist. I call him the magician of the ground. And right now, for his last 2 fights, he stood up for 5 rounds, striking. His striking has gotten much improved. So this should make for a very interesting fight.
Now, let me ask
ground.
You, Howard, did you have something to do with that? I mean, you know, were you in his, you know, in his ear saying, you got to stand yourself up, man. If you need a little bit of, you need some lessons, you know, stop out at Howard Davis' house.
Actually, being a promoter, you really can't do that. Sort of,
I know. I was playing the devil's advocate
being
there.
You're being a little facetious.
Yeah,
I do, but I do give advice to some fighters. I do give advice.
Yeah.
To all fighters. Anybody that want to hear me, I definitely will give advice.
Howard, so when is the fight coming up? When's your next fight?
August 23rd at the War Memorial Auditorium in Fort Lauderdale. I should say the historic War Memorial Auditorium in Fort Lauderdale. We're going on our 16th show. Matter of fact, we have one amateur show a month, and we already turned close to 50 amateurs pro. We take them to our amateur division right into our pro division. We turned almost 50 amateurs into pros going into Fight Time Promotions. So we're very proud of that also. Very humbling to me. I'm very happy to do that. I love helping people. I think that if you try to go in to try to make money first, I think you fail automatically.
Sure.
My first love, especially my wife and I, our first thing is to help fighters. And if we make money from it, fine. We're not making any money yet, but I'm so happy and proud, my wife and I, to be a part of this. To see fighters go from amateur to pro and be successful, that's more happy to me than putting a silver coin in my pocket sometimes. To see the fighters light up and have a career, that does a lot for my wife and myself.
Howard, I got to be honest with you. I'm not self-serving at all. I just fighter promotions is my goal, my dream. I'm very envious of you and your wife that you guys are, you know, in this position. And I can't imagine, you know, stepping back and watching, putting something together, putting so much heart and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into something, and then watching it come to fruition. I mean, you got to be just giddy about it. I mean, you're in 16 now, and you know, it's just got to be, you know, after every one, you got to sit back and be like, you know, high fiving your wife and be like, honey, we did this again.
Well, let me explain something to you. My wife and I, when we started Fight Time Promotions, we started with zero money. We didn't have a sugar daddy that says, "Hey, I believe in you guys. Let me put $1 million into Fight Time Promotions, and let's see where it goes." You know, my wife and I, and I'm telling you the truth, it's blood, sweat, and tears.
I can imagine.
My wife and I are up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Sometimes I'll be so tired at 2 o'clock I'll go to bed, or my wife and I will go to bed together. And next thing I know, I don't feel her next to me, and she's back on the computer again doing something. So it takes a lot of hard work on both of us. I have a great rapport with the fighters here, you know, and I'm glad that I stayed humble. I truly believe, and my father always told me, always stay humble, no matter where you are in life, whether you're up or down, always be humble and grateful to people, because without people, you could not achieve any goals. So I'm always aware of that. If it wasn't for the people in my company, there's no way in the world my wife and I could achieve the goals that we have achieved going into our 16th show. So that, to me, is very humbling. And I think that if you think that you've done something yourself, I think you're destined for failure. So my wife and I are always credit the people that work for us and work with us,
yep.
We're very grateful for that.
Howard, I would love to help you guys in any way I can, and I'm not even looking to work my way into a job. I would love to promote you guys any way I can. I'm getting yelled at behind the scenes, Howard. I want to get you back on here very, very soon. I want to talk to you about number 16. I want to talk to you about everything you got coming up. I just said to my producer off the air here, I said, this has been the greatest conversation I've ever had doing radio, and I really appreciate you coming on, Howard. I'm very humbled to sit and talk to such a great champion, such a great person in the fight game, and I really appreciate you coming on, Howard. Thank you very, very much tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure, and anytime you want to have me on again, it'll be an honor.
I appreciate that. Howard, before I let you go tonight, I want to give you a chance to tell everybody where they can find you, how they can get tickets, you know, anything. The floor is yours. Please let everybody know how they can get in touch with you.
Well, if you want VIP ticketing and the best seats in the house, call this number, 786-543-1177, or go to our website. And as you see our website, you'll see a documentary that we're trying to put together called The Making and the Unmaking of an MMA Fighter that will be shown next month in the fall on CSS here in Florida, some parts of Alabama, South Carolina, and some parts of Philadelphia. You're going to see a bird's eye view, like a fly on the wall, in the dressing room of a fighter getting instructions, seeing his hands wrapped, seeing him win or lose. You're going to have first-hand access to see what happens to a fighter, why he loses or why he wins. So that's going to be the documentary, The Making and the Unmaking of an MMA Fighter, which is coming out this fall. Also, remember to go on our website, fighttimepromotions.com. You get all information about ticketing, If you want to buy tickets, that's the place to be. That's the place to go on our website. VIP ticketing again, 786-543-1177. And remember, God bless everybody.
Howard, listen, I can't thank you and your wife enough, and you guys, you know, doing what you're doing, and I want to kind of talk to you a little bit off the air here. I tweeted a little bit of some stuff tonight because I really want to be a part of it and help you any way I can. And I'm not looking for any kind of stipend or anything. I just want to help you and kind of get your stuff out there. So we'll talk off the air, Howard. I can't thank you enough for being on tonight. We'll talk soon, okay, my friend?
My pleasure. All the best.
All right, Howard. Have a great night. All right.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Howard Davis, Jr., 1976 Olympic gold medalist. I have so much to say about that. I mean, the man, and I'm not even kidding when I tell you, that was the greatest conversation I've ever had. I love the fight game, the fight world. That was, you know, outside of having Muhammad Ali standing next to me, talking about, you know, fighting the thrill in Manila. That was the next best thing for me. But anyway, without further ado, I've kept these guys waiting long enough. Ten minutes. Gentlemen, I'm sorry. I know you guys have things going on.
Greg,
here we are. How are you fellas tonight? What do you got going on? What are we doing tonight?
How are you?
Turn your radios down, man. Turn the radios down.
There we go. All right, we're good.
Brad and Jimmy, what are you fellas up to?
Man, I was wondering what was going on right there.
My bad, man. All the children.
What are y'all doing out back?
We just chilling, man. We're chilling in the car with the AC on because it's hotter than hell out there.
What, I mean, you guys knew with this radio thing? You guys are musicians, for God's sake. You're going to be on the radio forever. You're going to have your radios up all the time. What the hell's going on?
Right.
What?
I got to ask you a question. Before we go any further, I want to know what happened this week that we had to take a drug test to hook up with a lady.
Huh? Oh, no. Oh yeah.
No, we're going there, fellas.
God, you're quit putting stuff on Twitter.
Man, that was some old school stuff. That's like 8 years ago when Chick's mom thought I was a pothead, so she wouldn't let her date me, and I never smoked, and so her mom actually made me take a drug test to go out with her one night, and I was like, you know what, whatever, I'll try, I'll do it, I know I'll pass, whatever. I could be wrong. And sure enough, I did it. So whatever.
And you passed? Did you go out?
The reason, hang on. The reason I tweeted that day is because I randomly seen her at the gym I was at.
So you passed the drug test, right? You passed the drug test, and you go out with this. The mother says, okay. Now am I talking to Brad or am I talking to Jimmy? I'm gonna get it down. Am I talking to Bragg or Jimmy?
This is Bragg.
Okay, so Bragg, you say, so you take this drug test. The mom says, you know what? You're a good young man. You can take my daughter out. Is that how it went?
No, it didn't go anything like that. It didn't go anything like that because even after that still wasn't enough, and I was still a pothead, and I didn't even smoke. So apparently,
go ahead.
Do what?
No, I was just gonna say the mom still wasn't like you because now she thinks you're definitely smoking pot.
Man,
you just had your buddy Gene fixing it up for you.
That's like 8 years ago, man.
Listen,
I can't believe you really brought that up.
Listen, I gotta
get out. I could not believe that.
Y'all are not down here in Florida. I gotta get as much information as I can, and where am I gonna get that information from? Twitter and Facebook. So everything you post, be ready to answer questions about, fellas.
I just out of everything that I post, I cannot believe that's the thing that you remember.
I know, right? It's so random. So
out
random.
Of everything. That's it.
So random, man.
So, fellas, we've been.
That was really awkward for me. Yeah, but I still passed it. That still wasn't good enough. But no, whatever. Hey, you can be regretting that one day, though. I promise you that.
We talk once a week. What have you guys done? What are you guys doing between the last time we talked and tonight? How has your week been? Take me through the last week of Bragg and Jimmy.
Woo! We got enough time for that.
Drug test, ladies, the whole shebang. What are we doing? Making music? What are we doing?
Yeah, we're always doing something with music, whether it be trying to make a video, trying to get a new song started, working on the song we've got started. You know, we got all kind of projects going on right now, for real.
I'm almost done with the video. It's going to take me another week because I had technical difficulties yet again. But that's what happens when you try doing shit yourself, you know what I'm saying? Learning from scratch and just doing it, man. Y'all going to actually enjoy this video. The video is actually badass, but as soon as I get it done, we'll post it.
No, I absolutely understand doing things scratch, and I understand that. So, you know, you're good with it. Where are we going to find this video when it comes out, Jimmy?
We will put it on YouTube. I mean, we have a YouTube channel, you know, YouTube. You can search the Bragg and Jimmy Show. That's what people used to call us. Look who it is. It's the Bragg and Jimmy Show. What will they do next, you know? That's kind of where we got that from.
I got to be honest, you guys, when I read your tweets and I follow you guys, because I follow you guys closely, just know that I'm keeping an eye on y'all too. So, because you guys, I got to be honest, you guys are
I have noticed that.
No, you guys are friends of the show. You guys are good people. You guys, you know, I appreciate what you're doing, and I really do. So I really kind of follow your lives, man, and you guys seem to be pretty legit people. And I got to be honest, you posted a picture maybe last Saturday or Sunday or Monday even that says something to the effect of, you know, you're not coming over unless I ask you to come over. Do you got people just banging down your door? It was like a text message picture, you know what I mean?
What's funny is we're outside, you know, I'm out front, both of them are out back, and there's probably 10 to 12 people in the house just chilling, listening to us on the radio and, you know, doing their own little thing, playing beer pong, whatever.
And you guys just have people knocking on your doors at all times. That's how that breaks down, isn't it?
Well, at one point in time, it got really bad, but, we're
it's
back
a
to bragging
session.
We've straightened people out. They know now. They know better than just show up now.
I hope so.
Well, if I ever come up there to see you guys, I'm going to make sure I call first because I don't want to drive all that way and then have y'all turn
right.
me away. Because
There you go. You're learning.
Hey, Carl, if you show up to our house randomly, I will kick your ass out, baby.
Woo! Carl, I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to have to pick Carl up from the airport. He lives in Canada. This is Jason. I live down here in Florida. I only live about, like, 13 hours away from y'all. So maybe we'll meet halfway, and I'll take you guys out to dinner or something in, like, Tallahassee or some shit. How's that?
Hey, we might be down for that. Hey, I am down any day, baby.
Listen, I'm down all the time. So we'll talk about that up here. But I understand tonight we have a new song we're going to break here live on Full Guard Fight Radio. We do it every week. Something badass is what I hear. It's called Hate On Me. Is that correct? Can you guys walk me through what Hate On Me is all about?
Yes. I will take the liberty of introducing this song as well. This is also featuring our roommate, Snowballs. Y'all can follow him at Ratchet, R-A-T-C-H-E-T, and I-D-G-A-F, Ratchet and Idiot.
When is Ratchet and Snowball? When is Snowflake and Twizzler? What are their names? What are they coming on the air with you guys?
What do they call me?
What are they coming on the air with you guys? Are you going to bring them on next week with you?
That's him right now. That's him. You're talking to him.
I'm right here. This is Snowball. Next week we'll bring Pinky on.
Who am I talking? Do I have? Tell me.
You're talking to Snowballs. This is Snowball. Right. Me right now, I'm Snowballs. What's so funny?
I just can't, I don't even know. If you guys were standing in front of me, I'm not sure it would be.
Hey, listen, Cole. Listen, get on Twitter right now and get on his name, and that's who you're talking to. Ratchet
okay.
And IDGAF. RACHETANDIDGAF.
Okay. So you're going to introduce Hate on Me, is that correct?
Right. Okay. So this song, pretty much, you know, if you're
going to describe ourselves.
If you're going to rap, man, you're going to have haters. You know, everybody going to hate. Why not us hate on ourselves? You know what I'm saying? Brad came up with the idea. He started the song off. He did a great job at it, you know, and then we threw our roommate in here, Snowballs. So, I mean, this is a song pretty much dedicated, you know, we're pretty much speaking for the haters, pretty much is what the song's about.
Listen, I'm a big fella. I shopped it in Husky section when I was, you know, I was a child. So I'm a big man, and I always grew up saying, make fun of yourself before they make fun of you. Is that kind of the way this song is all about?
I mean, not really. But I don't know.
All right. Well,
Honestly, there's no way people can hate, because the only way they can hate on us is to tell a lie. So if they're not, I mean, there's no way the truth can offend me, ever.
Hey, Greg.
Yo.
Hey, this is Snowballs. Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Hey, this is Snowballs, fellas. I live with Greg and Jimmy, the guys that you interview every weekend. This song is, you know, not everybody likes you. You can't please everybody. You can't make everybody
okay.
happy. People want to talk shit about you, and they don't even know who the fuck you are. They're like, oh, man, you know, I don't hang out with you, but I know what you do. Well, how the fuck is that? You don't see what I do. So this
Fair
is,
enough.
We pretty much made a song saying, okay, you don't like us. This is what you have to say about us, but now what? Because you don't say it to us. When you see me, you shake my hand. When you see me, you say, what up, baby? What up, baby? But when I don't see you, you're trying to talk to your girlfriend. They be trying to holler at somebody, you know, what up? Trying to talk bullshit about you because they think they know what you do. Oh, okay.
So,
you don't know,
we're gonna play the song. We're going to play the song, and it's Brag, Jimmy, and Snowballs. Is that who's on this album?
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
He's the second verse.
Yes.
Second verse.
Okay, Carl, are you ready to go with Hate on Me?
Sure. Coming up, Brag and Jimmy. What will they do next?
Yeah, I love it.
Uh-oh. I'm going to take a moment to hate on me.
Yeah, I love it.
What? Who is that? Let me tell you something about him, he lying. Talking about how he did shit and he can spit. Well, he really needs to quit before he get here. I'm talking two black eyes and busted lips. And why people like him is something I never get. And I'm about five hating when he quit. But if he say his name, expect me to throw a fit. Like, I really don't like him, I really don't do. Curly hair, 20 eyes, he think he's so cool. Hey, B-Rag, man, you old news. You think you good, is that what your mama told you? Yeah, I see you over there with your 20 eyes. Claiming you keep it real, you telling plenty lies. Say, and you do it big, you mini size. Yeah, I'm hating, bitch, you better recognize. So tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why don't you say it to me? You need to speak the truth, cause it sets you free. If they talking about me, it's probably a L-I-E. So tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why won't you say it to me? All I know how to do is open their mouth, but truth be told, they don't know what they talking about. Oh, shit, it's a
crazy dude Snowball. She thinks she's the hottest, cause they always say fuck y'all. I don't know how, we pulling dimes, we must lie. Girl, I seen him fuck three bitches, they were not. That's what a god, he didn't even try. Therefore, I know he had to tell a few lies. But you know he hang on his team, it gap guys. Riding around talking about how they stay high. He needs to grow up and start his own damn life. Settle on down with some kids and a wife. As a preacher man says, you ain't living right. Dicking them hoes down every single night. Girl, you know he's local, keep it fun on sight. He's tall, skinny, 24, and thinks he can fight. Just like Bruce, I was telling them lies. Man, fuck Snowball, you can't trust that guy.
So tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why don't you say it to me? You need to speak the truth, cause it sets you free. If they talking about me, it's probably a L-I-E. So tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why won't you say it to me? All I know how to do is open their mouth, but truth be told, they don't know what they're talking about.
Man, look at Bragging Jimmy and Snowball. Honestly, look at these three white guys trying to rap. There's no way, man. It's not gonna happen. Honestly, I think y'all should just give up, cut your losses, and move on with it.
Look at him, what is he thinking? He's so old and he thinks he can rap a freestyle and flow. Well, tell me why is he in the middle of the floor trying to drop a low? What you call a dancing man you don't even know? That's part of what did he just say? Give him topics like you come and kite the kids to play. He can't put it all together, man, there is no way. But damn, from the top of the brain, maybe they're on the way. And I bet if I keep hating, maybe one day it'll stop. I quit hearing about him being on top and how the ear gap has dropped. We'll pick it back up, you got a life to live. You can't live off a dream, this is reality, bitch. And I'm gonna hate forever until the day I die. And you're not gonna make it, so why do you try? You're a waste of talent and a waste of mind. And a waste of time and a waste of mine. Tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why don't you say it to me? You need to speak the truth, cause it sets you free. If they talking about me, it's probably a L-I-E. So tell me, is that really how you think? Well, if so, why won't you say it to me? All I know how to do is open their mouths, but truth be told, they don't know what they're talking about.
Oh,
I gotta be honest, guys. That is the best. We've been here 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I've heard three songs. That's the best song I've heard yet. So progressively, I love "Hate on Me." That's my favorite. Now I gotta ask: when you guys get into the studio, is it? Do you have stuff written down, or is it all in your head? Because I got.
We all actually do it different.
Really?
Like me, Bragg, when I go up there, I have no idea what I'm going to do, and I very, very rarely write something down. So I'll go in there, and I'll listen to a beat, and I'll just kind of get an idea from there, and I'll think of, 2 to 4 lines, and I'll lay them down, and I'll think of something else to go behind it, and I'll lay it down, and then I just tie everything together at the end. Might end up re-recording it when I'm done with all of it, and then I'm done, So wherever next goes.
Do you guys have a studio you go to consistently, or is it like you guys record stuff at the house and you just take it with you? Or
we had two buddies of ours build it, actually. Yeah, out back.
We had
shout out to Pinky and the Brain.
Hell yeah.
They'll be on the show next week.
Pinky, be on the show next week.
All right, listen. So you guys actually live at your studio.
I mean, it's out back in a shop.
Yeah, okay. It's not inside our house. It used to be, but now it's outside in a different place.
It's in a shop,
guys,
in a room in a shop, yep.
I want everybody on with you guys next week. I want Pinky in the Brain. I want Bragg and Jimmy. I want fans. I want whoever else you can pack in that car sitting outside the bar. I want everybody on there.
We don't have enough people or enough shows to do that. Enough time.
I owe you guys some time next week. I know I apologize to you. I ran long with Howard Davis Jr. I just didn't feel like I could let it go because, I just thought it was a great interview. And you guys are awesome. And every week I want to make sure we give you guys every second that you guys deserve because you guys are awesome. I really, truly believe that. You guys are friends of the show. You guys are always welcome on here. So next week, I promise you, I will give you, we'll get more time next week. I promise, guys.
That's fine, man.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Hey, shout out to the, Big Before Us, he made it, man. That was badass, man. I listened to most of that interview. That was pretty badass.
Yeah, Howard Davis, incredible. I mean, Howard Davis Jr. is a 1976 Olympic gold medalist.
Olympic gold medalist, hell yeah.
Right, and if you're talking to Olympic gold medalists who made it, and then we have a weekly segment, you know, I feel pretty happy about that, man.
Absolutely. Bragg and Jimmy, until next week, my man, my men, and Pinky in the Brain, I'll see you guys next week. How's that?
All right.
Perfect.
All right, fellas, thanks. I'll talk to you guys next week. Ladies and gentlemen, Bragg and Jimmy, debuting Hate on Me here on Full Guard Fight Radio. Carl, I know you're having some technical difficulties on the other side, my man. Are you ready to wrap up tonight? We only got a few seconds left.
Oh, yeah, I think everything's working now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, my friend.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, not having much fun with this dinosaur piece of junk, piece of shit.
You know, you know what I forgot to do tonight, Carl? I apologize. I owe Jax Media cast iron supplements. I want to thank. I owe them more than just the end of the show. Thank you. Because cast iron supplements has done.
Okay.
I got a package today. I got a package from Cast Iron Supplements today with tons of donations to a friend's cancer promotion today, and I can't thank Cast Iron Supplements enough. I'm going to make sure I you know, do a special thing for them. Pro-Am Belts, the best in the business. GFL, I mean, what do I say about them? They're incredible. Intimidation Clothing, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Here on Full Guard Fight Radio, MMA Madhouse. Carl, tonight was by far the best show we have done. We've only 3 weeks in, but I feel this is one of the best shows I've ever had, man. Two guests, two incredible guests. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel pretty confident that this was a good show.
Great show, dude. I got something that's come up. I really need to go, though, so I'll talk to you next week,
Carl.
Dude.
All right, my friend.
Have a good one.